It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA Sunny Young in Washington. Happy Friday and welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. Algeria will play Senegal for African football supremacy this Friday evening in Egypt. Kickoff is scheduled for 1900 hours UTC GMT at the Cairo International Stadium. At stake, the Africa Cup of Nations trophy and a first place prize of $4.5 million. The losing team will get $2.5 million. Joining us now with a preview is Samson Omale. Sporty greetings, Samson.
Sporty greetings to you, Sunny. After 51 marches, the Lions of Teranga of Senegal were squared out with the Desert Foxes of Algeria. Algeria have recorded only a draw in 6 games at the African Cup of Nations. The Fennec are in a race to go unbeaten in the competition, but that will mean having to beat Group B neighbors, Senegal. Algeria, like Egypt and Morocco, ended the group phases without conceding a goal, and with maximum 9 points, they also beat Kenya and Tanzania by 2 and 3 goals respectively. Riyad Mahrez, Algeria's Manchester City player, will be the star to watch from the Algerian side. For Senegal, Senegal's Teranga Lions have shown a steely character since their loss on match day 2 to Algeria. Aliou Cissé's charges have used a lone goal victory in all 3 matches in the knockout rounds, beating Uganda, Benin and Tunisia in the round of 16, quarter and semi-finals respectively. The final hurdle is Algeria. The Senegalese will be looking to avoid a second defeat at the hands of the Algerians. Nigeria's former captain Joseph Yobo, Larry Kingston, who played for Ghana Black Stars, and Teko Modise all bear their thoughts on tonight's finals between Algeria and Senegal.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a massive game for both sides and for different reasons, because Senegal, outside there, were one of the favorites to win. But take nothing away from this Algerian team. From start to finish, from the beginning of the tournament, they are the most solid team, most compact team. In the style that they play as well, everything, they were very purposeful in everything that they did.
You know, but one thing about the Senegalese, they are going to miss Koulibaly very much, because he's suspended for the final. And then with the Algerians, the attacking force that they have, without Koulibaly, I think they are going to have problems.
In my heart, you know, I want Sadio Mané to win it, merely because he's done well. You know, he's been consistent club level and also national team. And I know that this means a lot to him.
On Wednesday, Nigeria claimed 3rd place in the African Cup of Nations thanks to some calamitous defending from opponents Tunisia in Cairo. Aiming to maintain their perfect record in African 3rd place playoffs, Oduni Gallo scored the only goal as Nigeria beat Tunisia 1-0 in the 3rd place playoff. Alex Iwobi speaks on winning bronze at the tournament.
It's a great achievement considering the quality of the 24 team, so especially as our team is very young. I'm sure we're happy with this medal, but hopefully we can do better in the next African Cup of Nations.
Gerard Raw is a Super Eagles coach.
Our young team, I think, has a good future. There are still some mistakes. Our goals we conceded were individual mistakes, most of them, which means that working with young players, they will improve.
I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
Thanks, Samson, and I hope you have a sporty weekend. I'm Sunny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Reporters and football fans across Africa say the 32nd Nations Cup tournament in Egypt will be remembered as one of the most entertaining and well-organized. Magumi Davis Rakawinj reports from Kampala, Uganda.
Sports reporter Dalen Chayune, who is currently covering the AFCON finals in Egypt, says he's impressed by this year's tournament. He's particularly pleased with the level of competition displayed by all the participating countries.
The expansion to 24 teams didn't necessarily come with what many expected, that the Minnows would struggle against the Giants. We saw so many close results between the big and small teams. And of course, a couple of surprises, for example, Madagascar in Group A topping it, including beating Nigeria in the final group game. Also, the Uganda Cranes shocking Democratic Republic of Congo. I really think the expansion to 24 teams has generated a new vibe across the continent.
Sports reporter Brian Kawaria agrees.
There's been some good performances thanks to CAF's initiative of extending the AFCON up to 24 teams. I think that has showed that even smaller teams can come and compete at the continent. There have been some surprises, and there have been, of course, good performances from the expected individuals.
Among the surprises include a shock defeat of hosts and pre-tournament favourites Egypt by South Africa in the round of 16, and Benin's victory over North African giants Morocco. On the other hand, stars Riyad Mahrez, who plays for English champions Manchester City, and Sadio Mane, who plays for European champions Liverpool, spearheaded Algeria and Senegal respectively to today's finals. Sports fan Fred Asimwe was impressed by the introduction of technology at the finals.
There was VAR. At first, this looked like a joke to us because as Africa, even the Premier League, it has not showcased. But Africa, we had it first.
Video assistant referee or VAR system was introduced at the quarterfinal stage of the African Cup of Nations and has not gone without some controversy. For example, center referee delayed a game for about 5 minutes in the quarterfinal match between South Africa and eventual bronze winners Nigeria before he could allow a goal. Soccer enthusiast and reporter Sarah Sharon Adong applauds the Egyptians for a well-organized tournament.
It clearly showed the world that Africa has great potential in terms of tourism. And ideally, clearly tell you that the AFCON of this year was well organized, starting from the security itself, hospitality of players and the fans, the dishes, everything is just perfect.
Cameroon was supposed to host the finals, but was stripped of the rights due to security concerns and delays over construction of the stadium. For the Sony side of sports, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinjini, Kampala, Uganda.
Thanks, Magumi. And I hope you have a sporty weekend, too. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Now let's go to London, where there will be a big weekend of athletics action at the Muller Anniversary Games and IAAF Diamond League meet. The energetic Andy Edwards caught up with the new women's mile world record holder who was born in Ethiopia but became a Dutch citizen in 2013. Here's Andy.
Sifan Hassan is in extraordinarily good form as she comes into the London Diamond League. The Dutch runner has just broken the world record for the women's mile. And, of course, earlier in the year, she broke the world half marathon record. She's strong on the roads and very strong on the track. Sifan, for the last couple of years, you've been coached by Alberto Salazar, the Nike Oregon project, living in there over in the USA. You were a very good runner before, but what has changed for you since you've been working with Alberto in the project?
I mean, the things are, good time, 1500 meter and 800 meter, but I wasn't that much good to the endurance, to the long distance. Since I joined Alberto, because Alberto had a really good 10 kilometer and 5 kilometer Olympic champion, so my program is mostly changed. I was more jump to also more endurance, and I think that maybe helped me to do the half marathon and also the 5K I ran last year, big PB. I think that's the reason.
When you went to the start line at that women's mile, did you expect to break the world record?
Yes, when I went to the, because I ran in Stanford, 10 kilometer very fast, time, I think nine second PB. So I expect I will run a world record because I already ran last year 4:14, like just 2 seconds off the PB. I thought I'm gonna run PB, but suddenly we come the first 800 very slow. Like we supposed to come 204, we come 208. I was like, I give up. I was like, okay, I'm not gonna get it. I don't even gonna close to my PB. So I just try to run. Just try to run good form and just enjoy the race.
You're running the 5,000 metres here in London, the Diamond League, and you just said at the press conference that looking at Doha, the World Championships, you think you're going to go for the 5,000 and 10,000 double rather than trying to do 1,500 and 5K because the schedule doesn't permit that. So would you feel confident? Do you think you've got good chances of doing a 5 and 10,000 metre double at the World Championships?
I don't know that much about 10,000 because I haven't really done. I just did last time in Stanford to get the time. I have to train, I think, more for 10,000 metres and see where I am. But I'm sure for 5,000 metres, I have done last year. I did also in the competition, I did 3,000 metres, also good time, 8:18. But about 10,000 metres, I have 2 months to train. I'm really, I don't like doing that much endurance. I'm not like...
Sivan, all the best for the weekend in London. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
The energetic Andy Edwards also caught up with Jamaica's Olympic and world champion in the men's high hurdles. Once again, here's Andy.
Well, Omar McLeod is the Olympic and world champion in the high hurdles from Jamaica. And I'd like to pick up on something you've been talking about today, the physicality, the physical contact sport, which is high hurdling. Now, give us an insight into what that means.
Yeah, it is a contact sport. Like, and I've proven it over the years. You guys have seen me over and over. Every season always is like the same, where, you know, I'll start out really good and then falter along the way. Every year I'll probably fall over a hurdle or two. You know what I mean? Not intentionally, but it happens. And it just goes to show you that hurdling is so, especially, you have to be very graceful with it. It's such a delicate event where it's like, if you're not on, you're going to be off.
When you see the lane draws, whether it's heats or a final,
yeah.
I mean, obviously you're on the circuit a lot, very experienced, big name.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever look and think, oh, I know that guy next to me or that guy, you know, they can be, shall we say, a bit untidy in their technique.
Yeah.
So you have to, I mean, do you have to be aware of other people? But, you know, it's so precise and so fast.
Mm-hmm.
How do you combine that?
That's a great question, because what my agents know, when I go to a meet, just tell me the lane that I'm in, because I know exactly what I need to do in the race. My job is to get out in front of everybody and control the race. If I do that, I don't have to worry about who's beside me. I never care for who. I don't want to know who's beside me, you know? And just like, you kind of know who's going to be beside you just because of like their name. So, you know, like, you know, the top names are always in the middle, you know? So you kind of know who's going to be. You can use that, you know? It's like you've been in the sport for so long, you know that the top three is going to be in the middle. But like I said, I'm very aware of my competitors. I respect them so much. But when I go to meets, that's not my job. I cannot worry about who is beside me. I know I need to worry about getting in front of everybody and try to control the race.
Just lastly, of course, you're returning to the stadium, London Stadium, where you won that world title a couple of years ago. What memories do you have of that and the kind of all the build-up to the World Championships?
The memory I have is winning, obviously. And then one of the other memories, me and my mom, you know, just being here and she getting to watch me from the sideline, from the finish line, watch me win. That was like one of the marquee moments in my life. You know, just as a mom, seeing your child accomplishing a dream that they've always wanted, it was a special thing for me. And I was happy that she was there to be a part of that. And, you know, that's why this place is just special. Very, very special.
Omar, thanks very much.
Thank you.
And thank you, energetic Andy Edwards, for that interview with Jamaican athlete Omar McLeod, the Olympic and world champion in the men's 110 meters high hurdles. Omar will compete this weekend at the IAAF Diamond League meet in London, and he spoke with Andy in the British capital. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. London is also where Novak Djokovic and Roger Federer played an epic Wimbledon tennis final 5 days ago. Djokovic won in 5 sets in a match that took nearly 5 hours. My VOA colleague Jim Stevenson looks back on the titanic tennis match between two of the sport's greatest champions.
Novak Djokovic of Serbia has a 5th Wimbledon men's tennis title.
It was a huge relief in the end, honestly. In this kind of matches, you work for, you live for. They give sense and they give value to every minute you spend on the court. training and working to get yourself in this position and play the match with one of your greatest rivals of all time.
Djokovic and Swiss great Roger Federer went the distance at the All England Club with a tie break in the final set. Djokovic felt he was behind Federer most of the way in the 7-6, 1-6, 7-6, 4-6, 13-12 final.
I thought I was mostly matched on the back foot, actually. I was, you know, defending. He was dictating the play. And I just try to fight and find a way when it mattered the most, which is what happened.
The epic championship match could have gone either way, and Federer was happy to have a chance to win.
Happy to be at 8-all, 9-all, I don't remember what it was. So, you know, you try to see the positives, you try to take it as a good thing, I guess, you know, that you're not down a break or that you're not, the match is not over yet. And if I could have picked it, you know, before the match to be at 9-all in the fifth, that wouldn't be a terrible thing. So you just always try to push yourself to see things on the better side. But, yeah, it was definitely tough, you know, to have those chances.
Djokovic dug in when he had to.
I thought I could have played better, but at the same time, one thing that probably this, you know, allowed me to come back and save match points and win this match was the mental stability in those moments. I guess that all of these things combined results in a courageous effort, but you know, there is not a specific formula to find the courage. I mean, at least from my perspective.
Federer wasn't certain of this match compared to another legendary Wimbledon final against Rafael Nadal of Spain in 2008.
Epic ending, so close and so many moments. Yeah, I mean, sure there's similarities, you know, but you got to go dig and see what they are, you know. I'm the loser both times, so that's the only similarity I see.
For Djokovic, the level of difficulty was new for him.
It was probably the most demanding, mentally most demanding match I was ever part of. I had most physically demanding match against Nadal in finals of Australia. They went almost 6 hours. But mentally, this was a different level because of everything. And I'm just obviously thrilled and overjoyed with emotions to be sitting here in front of you as a winner. I mean, it was one shot away from losing the match as well. I mean, this match had everything and it could have gone easily his way.
But it didn't. And Federer says he'll move on.
Similar to 08, maybe I will look back at it and think like, well, it's actually not that bad after all, you know, but for now it hurts and it should, you know, like every loss hurts here at Wimbledon.
Djokovic has defeated Federer in 26 of their 48 meetings and now has 16 major titles, 2 behind Nadal and 4 behind Federer, who is not worried that someone may catch his Grand Slam record.
Not so much trying to stay ahead, you know, because I broke the record and if somebody else does, well, that's great for them and you can't protect everything anyway, and that was not, I didn't become a tennis player for that. I really didn't, you know. It's about trying to win Wimbledon, trying to have good runs here, you know, playing in front of such an amazing crowd and in front of in this center court against players like Novak and so forth. You know, that's what I play for.
Novak Djokovic began his celebration with a quick post-match snack. Tasty Wimbledon grass.
Better than ever. I don't know. It tasted amazing. And still, I'm still digesting it.
I'm happy about what I achieved these 2 weeks, and I can't describe how I feel winning Wimbledon. It's pretty special.
Special, as Simona Halep becomes the first Romanian women's champion at Wimbledon, rolling over American Serena Williams 6-2, 6-2 in just 56 minutes.
Today I decided before the match that I'm going to focus on myself and on the final of Grand Slam, not on her. So that's why I was able to play my best, to be relaxed and to be able to be positive and confident against her.
Williams knew she was outplayed.
She just played great, so I don't think it's a surprise for anyone to play great against me. I just was trying different things, and today nothing really helped, but also made a lot of way too many errors for a lot of stuff to work.
Halep charged from the start and never let up.
I knew that I have to be aggressive and being 100% for every ball, that I don't have to let her come back to the match because she's so powerful and so strong. She knows how to manage every moment. So I knew that I have to stay there, which I did pretty well today. I'm very sure that was the best match of my life. Also on grass against her is never easy.
Serena is looking to see if this will be a new level of play from Halep.
When someone plays lights out, there's really not much you can do. I mean, you just have to understand that that was their day today, and hopefully they can play like that more often and more consistently.
Williams was aiming for a 9th Wimbledon title and a record-tying 24th major and isn't certain if that elusive mark is becoming tougher to achieve.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think it's harder. I think it's just, you know, just coming out there and doing the best that you can do. And that's really all you can do, really.
For Halep, winning the final point was great.
It's tough to describe the moment. It's just you feel like light. You feel everything. It's beautiful and you just try to enjoy.
Her mother's dream was to reach a Wimbledon final. Now Simona Halep has taken that dream a step farther with an added special prize.
I want this badly. When I started the tournament, I talked to the people from the locker room that my dream is to become a member here. So today it's real and I'm really happy.
A really happy Simona Halep, the 2019 ladies singles champion at Wimbledon. And thanks to my VOA colleague Jim Stevenson for that extra spicy Wimbledon package. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Now let's turn to the world of cycling, where the Tour de France is in high gear. Friday was an individual time trial stage, meaning the riders begin their leg at staggered start times, 2 minutes apart. But even though most riders don't see each other on the course during a time trial stage, there was serious drama in France on Friday. Brown Daily Herald sports writer and VOA intern Ryan Handel brings us an update. Sporty greetings, Ryan.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. As you mentioned, today, the 13th stage of the Tour de France was an individual time trial leg, the only such leg of this year's race. Entering today's stage, Frenchman Julien Alaphilippe held a 1 minute and 12 second lead in the general classification over British rider Geraint Thomas. But Alaphilippe was expected to lose significant time to Thomas, who is an experienced time trial expert. However, Alaphilippe had something else to say about that. He put on an incredible ride to win the stage by a full 14 seconds to not just keep the yellow jersey, but extend his overall lead. The spectacular performance was fueled by the French crowd that surrounded him and cheered him on at every turn and straightaway of the 27-kilometer stage. The odds-on favorite to win the individual time trial coming into today was actually Belgian rider Wout Van Aert. After winning a time trial in the Critérium du Dauphiné race in June, Van Aert was primed to bring home the best time today. But then, tragedy struck on stage 13. Wout Van Aert suffered a scary crash in the final kilometer of the leg. The Belgian hit a barrier trying to make a sharp turn, injuring his right leg. Seriously hurt and unable to finish the leg, Wout Van Aert was forced to abandon the 2019 Tour de France. Of note, in the time trial legs, riders compete on special time trial bikes that are more aerodynamic but harder to maneuver, which may have contributed to Van Aert's crash on the sharp turn. Van Aert's team, Team Jumbo-Visma, provided an update via Twitter. Wout Van Aert unfortunately has to abandon the race after his crash. He is conscious and has a flesh wound at his right upper leg, the team said. Van Aert won stage 10 and looked to have a good chance at winning this stage, but instead, his 2019 Tour de France is now over. We wish him a speedy recovery. With the riders not bunched together in the peloton today, we had some varying times and in turn a standing shakeup. Julien Alaphilippe remains in first in the yellow jersey race and Geraint Thomas stays in second. But Dutch rider Steven Kruiswijk shot to third after a strong ride. We have a new leader in the young rider classification. That's Enric Mas, the a 24-year-old Spaniard. After a strong time trial, he'll take the white jersey from Colombian Egan Bernal, who struggled today. Mas also moves up to fourth place in the general classification, while Bernal drops to fifth. And that's all I have from the Tour de France today. Back to you, Sonny.
Thanks, Ryan. Brown Daily Herald sports writer and VOA intern Ryan Handel. And that wraps up the July 19th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Nick Ivanoff. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Have a nice weekend, everyone. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Feast with your ears on Music Time in Africa, your connection to the best Pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
This one, this one,
every show brings you the best music from across the continent, old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists, too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the African Continental Free Trade Area is now a reality that, if successful, will create a $3.4 trillion economic bloc. A closer look at Africa's free trade agreement on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
This is Science in a Minute.
A 2017 market research report suggests people around the world spend about $132.8 billion U.S. dollars each year on dietary supplements such as vitamins and minerals. An enormous new analysis involving about 10 U.S. universities and medical institutions, 277 clinical trials, and almost 1 million research participants suggests that almost all vitamin, mineral, and other nutrient supplements or diets cannot be connected to longer life or protection from heart disease. The analysis shows only a low-salt diet, omega-3 fatty acid supplements, and perhaps folic acid for some might provide possible health benefits. The study also found that while most of the supplements weren't harmful, a combination of calcium and vitamin D might be linked to a slightly increased risk of stroke. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hello, thank you for listening to Border Crossings with Larry London. This month, Border Crossings is giving away a really cool Voice of America t-shirt. Hooray! If you want to win one of these awesome shirts, all you have to do is make a song request for our show.
I see it. I got it, yeah.
Tune into Border Crossings at 1500 Universal Time every weekday in August for your chance to win.
Do the policies of the Trump administration alleviate or exacerbate the immigration crisis along the U.S. southern border? On Encounter, Cristobal Ramon, senior policy analyst at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Ariel G. Ruiz Soto, associate policy analyst at the Migration Policy Institute, discuss the substance and politics of the immigration crisis with Carol Castiel, Saturday and Sunday.
The Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 2230 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com.
Hi, this is Lori London. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts. Every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.
This is VOA News. I'm Liz Palka.